Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Melissa Rooker. I live in Fairway and represent the 25th District, which is the cities of Fairway, Roland Park, Westwood, Westwood Hills, Mission Woods, most of Mission, Little Prairie Village, and a lot of Mission Hills.
I remember you. Here comes the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. And joining Melissa and myself today in the KCUR production studio, Jay Center from Prairie Village, who's also editor of pvpost.com. By the way, you're doing a hell of a job covering that part of Northeast Johnson
County.
Glad to
be here. Thank you so much.
And happy to have you here. And my KCUR colleague, Kyle Palmer, who you are soon going to be hearing an awful lot of on the radio. He's also going to head up our teacher reporting project during the summer. We're going to get into that conversation a little bit later. First, Melissa, great to have you back. Lots to talk about. But staying in the Statehouse Blend spirit, tell me again about your kids.
My kids. My daughter, Lindsay, is going on 23 and getting married in September. We spent the holiday weekend last weekend searching for a wedding dress with great success. And my son, Jack,
I'm a little teary.
we said goodbye to Jack on Monday. He'll spend 8 weeks this summer interning in London at King's College Hospital. He just wrapped up sophomore year at KU.
Wow. Good to hear.
You didn't ask me about Charlie.
Who's Charlie?
My dog.
Oh, you know, we talked about Charlie before, but you know what? Because you drove all the way in from Topeka, tell me about Charlie.
Charlie had knee reconstruction surgery 5 weeks ago. But he's doing well. He's on the mend.
I'm very pleased to hear that. I'm tempted to ask what that set you back, but you know what? I'm happy that he's doing well. There's a lot that I want to talk about, but I want to take the first trip around the table. Jay, what's on your mind?
Well, I think what's on most people's mind is what is going on in Topeka, and I know that by the time this airs, it could be totally different, but I would love to hear Melissa's take on the last day or two in Topeka, as the governor called a press conference on Friday and subsequently canceled it.
Yeah, let me just say we're recording this on Saturday morning. Melissa will be heading back to Topeka. They're going to be in session this entire weekend, so there may be something that we say here that won't be particularly timely, but there has been, as Jay said, an enormous amount of intrigue, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that.
Chaos. It's been chaos. There's such an absence of leadership. It's breathtaking.
When you say leadership in the legislature, from the administration, what are you speaking of?
All of the above.
Really?
All of the above. There does not seem to be a guiding plan. There's a guiding philosophy that our tax cuts are working and the economy is growing and everything is wonderful, so that is guiding the process and preventing us from coming to the kind of solution that would actually get us out of the fiscal mess we're in. But there doesn't seem to be a cohesive plan guiding the process.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what especially in our people in our little part of Johnson County have seen over the course of this session is that, yeah, there is this dedication to the tax cut plan that went into effect a couple of years ago. And no matter what information comes down the pike, there seems to be a real resistance to take a look at the numbers that are on the table and figure out how to make ends meet. As you've kind of followed along on Twitter from some of the State House reporters over the past couple of days, it has just been, you know, awe-inspiring to see how things shift from one spectrum to the other. And just there's no cohesive plan that's coming out at all. And you just wonder, how is this going to get sorted out?
Yeah, let's keep going around. Kyle?
Well, yeah. I mean, Ms. Rooker, it does seem that there's not really any plan that's going to be coming together anytime soon. I mean, what's the mood in the Capitol, and what do you think is going to come of it?
You know, tempers are starting to flare. People are on edge. I think we will end up with a plan, but my fear is that it will be such a flawed plan. It'll be short-term fixes. It'll be just pushing the problem down a year, 2 years down the road. We will get to a place where the budget and you know, the plan meets, but it'll be the push from the administration appears to be towards consumption taxes, which are sales taxes. So there are so many competing philosophies in play, and so many people committed to the notion that they will not raise taxes of any kind, that it's not going to be an easy road to get there. But I think by, you know, the pressure is getting ratcheted up on the lawmaking body by keeping us through the weekend, and the way they'll begin to manage us will ramp up that pressure and the intensity of, we got to find a way to get out of here. And people will begin to start moving.
Jay, you look like there's something on your mind.
Well, I guess my question is the short-term fixes. What do you think they are?
Well, you know, you'll see adjustments to the sales tax rate. After all the we've had two campaign cycles based on the temporary 3-year 1-cent sales tax increase done to get us through the recession. And yet, after hammering away at the people who voted to do that for the good of the state, that's exactly what they now need to have happen. You need sales tax revenue because that's a more immediate jolt into the state treasury. So you can't rely on just fixing income tax issues, because that's a year out before you start seeing the rewards of that. There likely will not be much happening with income tax rates. I do think that there are different plans afoot to, there's $97 million worth of revenue that could be realized if we institute a plan to scale back on itemized deductions that are allowed. There is a plan I don't believe will actually come to pass, but they want to tax the MCOs, the providers for the Medicaid program. So there are different components that could be added in, but again, the competing philosophies, the bulk of the problem stems from the change in our income tax code, and yet they don't want to go back and revisit that.
Hey, it just occurred to me, when did sales tax become consumption tax? Who came up with that phrase?
Oh, God, I think...
I mean, is consumption tax to make us feel... Is that supposed to make us feel better?
I think it is. I think, you know, it's meant to say, hey, those are choices. If you don't want to pay that tax, consume less. You know, those are discretionary options. And yet, in the state of Kansas, we tax food. We tax things that are necessities. There were ideas floated this session to tax utilities, to tax gasoline, increase what we pay at the pump. So, you know, they call it consumption and call it discretionary, but really and truly, they're taxing things that are required in our everyday
lives. Maybe you should start calling them necessity taxes.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, we have a world of think tanks that dream these things up, and they are, they're.
You think they focus group that?
Absolutely, positively.
Well, my question is, where do you have colleagues in the House and Senate who have such a rigorous anti-tax philosophy? What is the motivation for that? Where does that come from? And I mean, I contrast it with what I've read on your website and through some of your public pronouncements, where you seem to be getting a lot of ideas from your constituents who seem to not necessarily be liking what's happening in Topeka. So for your colleagues who are so fervently anti-tax, where does that come from?
This is the world of small government philosophy. I mean, these are folks who truly believe in the idea that we need limited government that is much smaller and does less. And, you know, this gets me back to the theme that I've been harping on since, forever. Elections have consequences, right? And so the people have chosen to elect leaders who believe in smaller government. So we're talking about the situation as if it's a problem, but for some people in charge, this is an opportunity.
And wouldn't you say, excuse me, Jay, and I want to come, and I have a question for you, but you would say that they're mostly, would you say, I guess, that they're mostly true believers, or is there, how much political expediency, right? How much of the political tarot cards are they reading and saying, this is where I need to be politically, if I'm, because there might be some, and there's plenty, who maybe want to advance their career through this particular philosophy?
Well, the cynic in me says that there's plenty of that, but I think, I really believe that these are true believers leading the process. These are true believers, and that's something you could get around the political expediency, because you could build a case the other way, right? You can begin to ramp up pressure, get constituent input, get some of the interest groups and their lobbyists to put pressure on folks and change that mood. But you can't change people's beliefs. And so I think the true believers among us are you know, that's the biggest obstacle that we face.
Yeah, you know, Jay, where you live and where you and the part of the county that you cover is really quite different than the southern part of Johnson County, parts of the western part of the county. And I grew up in northeast Johnson County, live there now. But I've never quite figured out how did that dichotomy come about, right? How is it that we've got almost two different Johnson counties? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it absolutely is the only real purple area in Johnson County, as far as I can tell. And if you looked at the election data from this past November, and you look at the 435 loop, you see that outside the 435 loop, it is strongly Republican, and inside it is a patchwork of blue and purple and blue and purple and red. Why that is, I suppose we could speculate for ever
well,
and ever
ahead.
And ever.
It's a podcast.
I think
speculate away.
You know what? It's these are communities that have been established for a long time. They're the oldest communities in Johnson County, and they grew up around their public school system. And there are hundreds and thousands of people who've chosen very explicitly to live in that region because of the public schools. And so when you have a legislature that is dominated by a conservative philosophy that has postured as relatively hostile to public education over the course of the past 4 or 5 years, that is something that in Northeast Johnson County, where people have chosen not just to live in the school district, but perhaps their specific neighborhood because they want their kid going to a specific elementary school and a specific high school. It's very, very difficult for them to just say, yep, even though we're pro-business, even though we are, you know, generally a conservative group of people, we can't just cast our lot in with this more extreme version of conservatism that's taken over in the House at this point.
Yeah, your thoughts?
I would agree with that. Although I do take issue, I don't think the philosophy guiding us is truly conservative. There's something very radical afoot, radical in a different sense than people maybe view that, but there is a recklessness to the decision making when you're not willing to fund the core services the state is obligated to provide. You look at some of the exposés that have been published in the recent spring session. The last weekend, the Topeka Capital Journal had an article about the stresses on the staffing at our state hospital system. Earlier in the session, Brad Cooper at the Star had an article about the Kansas Highway Patrol staffing shortages. We know our corrections department is facing severe shortages. And
overcrowded at the same time.
Absolutely. And so we are seeing the stress of cutting budgets to the level that we've cut them, and it interferes with the ability to deliver these very basic services that are the mission of these agencies.
So my question is, and kind of going back to what you were saying before about elections have consequences, I think it strikes a lot of people that the legislature over the course of the past 4 or 5 years has kind of kicked the can down the road, and they've used these short-term patches, et cetera, et cetera. At what point do constituents across the state start to feel the effects of this philosophy to the degree that, hey, maybe it's time to shift course?
Now. I mean, people spent their April break at home listening to the groundswell of complaint about the direction we're heading. I think the public gets it, and I think that we have a lot of folks who are ignoring the constituency they represent in order to adhere to this philosophical march to zero. But
When you say march to zero, you're talking about income taxes.
Income taxes, right. But the people get it. And that is the message being sent pretty consistently from all around the state. But there is a group that is not catering to them.
Yeah. I want to swing this to, to education. It's been the dominant theme of the session, the dominant theme around this table.
Well, it was.
Yeah. Well, it's still going on, yeah. So we don't know. There has been some talk, and again, the session is still in. We don't know what's going to happen as we record this weekend, but there has been talk about more cuts. Mm-hmm. If you couldn't come up with enough money in taxes, that means that education is once again vulnerable. And I want to bring Kyle in. We've talked a lot about this, and this is what part of our summer project is about, how the nature of teaching is changing. And one of the ways that it is changing is, and I think that you can describe it as a tax by officials and some in politics on the profession. And so I'm wondering, as a teacher now, as my colleague here, is this something that the teachers think about? And while you're doing that, I'm going to ask Melissa to give me like half a cup of coffee.
So, well, I think as a former teacher, now journalist here at KCUR, I think I can safely say that there is in the profession an idea or an expectation that you're supposed to do more with less. Mm-hmm. And that has been a burden that I think teachers more often than not willingly take on because of the responsibility that they feel towards their students and their colleagues at school. But it's something that at a practical level becomes harder and harder as the money keeps getting less and less. And what I wanted to ask Ms. Rooker was,
so mannerly.
I know. You may call me Melissa.
This is my first podcast. So Melissa, you're right. With the moves earlier this session to kind of dump the funding formula for the block grants, do you think funding in Kansas, do you think that move was made as a way to kind of set up a new expectation for what the funding levels will be for Kansas districts? And going forward, what do you think will be the funding environment?
Well, yeah, but that move was made to dismantle the current version of public education in this state. That's my opinion.
Yeah, it wasn't cast that way. It was cast
as
a way to...
Of course not. It was cast as a way to fix the broken formula and save our schools. And so the champions of that plan, those 64 who voted for it, cast themselves as champions of education, and those of us who voted against it are the villains. However, it's quite the opposite, because we jumped off a cliff with this plan. So all the rules were just thrown away. The formula was a very complex set of calculations that provided funding for students with particular needs and directed resources where they were needed. So when you have a higher concentration of students living in poverty, the formula provides extra weighting for those students, more money, and you could bring in the resources needed. If you live in a rural area and have great distances to transport students, that's expensive, and there was a weighting for that. So on and on through the formula, there were provisions for where need was greatest. Now, it means that you start with the basic amount per pupil and then add these weightings and get to the sum total of the funding that each student brought to the district. And what you could compare apples and oranges and say, well, that district overall gets X million of dollars and we're only getting Y. So, you know, it's not fair. But it actually equalized pretty brilliantly. And we threw all that away, and now what we have is a static model. The dollar, it was basically arbitrarily chosen. They froze funding where it was. Well, this August, there will be more students in our schools, and you're not going to get the weighting that the consideration you used to get is that there's another pupil, so you got the base amount plus whatever weightings they may or may not bring. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. So our school districts will get the same amount next year they got this year. The superintendent of the Olathe schools in spring shared his concern. Their estimate was they were going to have 300 additional students attending their schools this coming school year. They don't get money for 300 new students. So that's a basic problem with it. And the champions of this call it certainty and stability for our schools. Well, there's no certainty. The deadlines for negotiating next year's contracts are
teacher contract.
Yeah, there we had a May 15th deadline for letting people know if they had a job or not in the coming school year. Well, how do you know if you're going to have to cut positions or not yet? We don't have a state budget. Therefore, the schools don't really know if the money will be there or not.
Jay, I want to just ask you about Shawnee Mission, but in terms of uncertainty, and I just want to get a quick comment about you on this, from you on this, is that because there's no budget, the State Board of Regents, the universities have not been able to set tuition for next year. So,
right.
So by not having a budget, I mean backing up a lot of important work that needs to get done to prepare for everything.
Absolutely. We, as a state, change over to a new fiscal year July 1, right? So there's a pay period. I think the deadline is June 6. If we don't have the budget for 2016 in place, we can't make that transition. And that's where you start seeing the news stories about the potential for furloughs. There are real-world consequences to not getting our work done. And to date, we have not had a budget debate in the House.
Yeah, Jay.
Yeah, like Olathe, Shawnee Mission at their board meeting this week announced that they're expecting about 100 more students to come into the district. And yeah, there's no funding that comes along with that.
But now my question to you is, and you are unique in that you're the only one who shows up to cover the Shawnee Mission.
For better or worse, I think that's true.
and they were wholeheartedly, perhaps a little reluctantly, but certainly publicly, in favor of going to block grants. And my question to you is, what is it that
Absolutely.
They know that the rest of the state doesn't?
Well, it is the most fascinating dichotomy that has come out of this past session, because you have a group of people, of which Melissa is one, who say, this formula works. The problem is the legislature has not been funding it. The
right.
courts have said the legislature has
right.
not been funding it. Let's focus on that part.
And let's not forget that there is a district court ruling that's pending, and everybody fully expects that ruling to come before the end of the fiscal year. So I just want to drop that in. But go ahead.
But there is a group of people who were involved in Northeast Johnson County politics, some of the heavier big names from back in that era around 1992 when the bill was passed, the Dick Bonds and Audrey Langworthies of the world, who absolutely loathed this formula when it was passed, recognized that it was not fair to Johnson County, that often it's sending Johnson County dollars out of the area to other districts, that it silos money and doesn't allow the district to have much local control. All right, so the other group of people, and Senator Wolf was one of them, say, we've hated this bill forever. We've always complained that it's not fair to Johnson County. This is our opportunity to change it. And to think that we're going to go straight from the current formula to a new formula that's better for Johnson County without some sort of a timeout chance to get everything sorted out is unrealistic. Dr. Henson in the Shawnee Mission School District.
The superintendent?
The superintendent. Has been much more assertive and aggressive on this front. And yeah, the district cast its lot with the block grant bill. I think once the block grant bill went in place, he went out of his way to demonstrate that it does have benefits to the district. We can eliminate all day kindergarten fees. We can lower class sizes because some of these silos are relaxed. The problem is, and I think from people in Melissa's camp, the idea that even if you've allied yourself with the people who like the block grant bill and are getting yourself in a position to have a real strong voice in the creation of whatever the new formula is, how can you trust a group of legislators to come up with a bill that's better and fairer and sufficient for Shawnee Mission when over the course of the past 4 or 5 years, they have been incredibly hostile to public education as a whole?
Yeah. Exactly right. And there's no plan, there's no mechanism built into this to suggest how we go about building the new funding scheme. So is it a free-for-all, just submit your idea and we'll see what – I mean, that's already happened. Senator Abrams mm-hmm. submitted a plan that didn't go anywhere.
Didn't go anywhere, but by the way, I thought was fairly reasonable.
No.
You didn't think so?
No.
All right.
No. What was unreasonable about it was the amount of data that would need to be collected on our students.
There was some
post graduation from college.
I hear what you're saying. That was a little unrealistic, but at least he recognized that there were differences among districts that had to be smoothed out. Would you say that?
He narrowed the number of differences, but yes, I would give credit to that right. There was
but
some
you're
acknowledgement.
Right, there was that sort of crazy data that may not even exist, really.
So what committee of people is going to come up with a new program, and who's to say that it will be better for Johnson County? So, you know, what I have always acknowledged is that the formula had areas that we could improve. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So why we simply repealed it without a safety net plan or proposal in place to replace it with, I do not understand.
And from Shawnee Mission's perspective, I think it would be very, very interesting to see what happens and how involved the Shawnee Mission administration and perhaps the Blue Valley administration is as well in the crafting of a new formula. I mean, I think since watching Dr. Henson take his office over the course of the past 2 years, you get the sense that he is a very intentional fellow and is thinking things through several steps down the road. So I think that move to align the district with that block grant was well thought of.
I think he's a skilled politician. You would agree?
Oh, I would agree.
Yeah, Kyle?
I think we're already seeing kind of the seeds of iniquity sown with this, the block grant move, because, I mean, I think Shawnee Mission is a relative winner in this because you have rural school districts who closed early this year. Yeah. You have KCK that just announced that they're laying off 30-some administrators, all of whom were or most of whom were in charge of tracking data and testing in the district. And so you have these mandates from both, you know, a national and state level to districts to, you know, up test scores and get kids tested and get kids, you know, on track growth and development. But yet they're not now getting the money to be able to do that and track that effectively. So I think, unfortunately, a move to a block grant system or this very uncertain system is just going to widen the gap between the haves and have-nots in education.
Well, and that's just it. Shawnee Mission and Blue Valley are probably the only two districts in the state that come out relatively unscathed. And even at that, there are the block grant doesn't increase their funding. So even that, even Shawnee Mission lost, I think, just under $1 million. So no one came out a winner. 80% of the districts in the state are far worse off than before the block grants. And what I've maintained from the moment this bill was introduced is, yes, I represent my district, my 20-square-block district. It has one school district, Shawnee Mission, and I have to keep those concerns at the forefront of my decision-making process. But my vote affects over 460,000 children in the state of Kansas, and I can't ignore that.
I want to ask you a little bit one final time about the drama of this session. But before I do, let's go around the table for a final thought. Jay?
I think everyone who reads PV Post will be just very, very interested to see what happens over the next few days in Topeka, and especially with the funding of the block grant, because the full funding of that block grant is the major caveat in a lot of positive things that would be happening in the Shawnee Mission District. And if the legislature backs off of that commitment they made earlier this year, I think you're going to have people up in arms.
Yeah. Kyle?
Oh, well, I'm glad we got to talk about education today, because I think the drama that is currently happening on this weekend and will continue into next week when we air this, I think from a public's perspective has the chance to kind of cover up some things that have happened before, and people will remember this session for what is happening right now with trying to close this budget gap. But the moves that were made in education funding, I think, are going to be much more, I think, longer lasting. We're going to feel the consequences and effects of that in the state for a much longer time to come.
Yeah. So I think it was my friend Barb Shelley over at the Kansas City Star wrote a column this week. I think it was her talking about how the state of Kansas, how government used to just chug along, right? There was no drama. It was fairly efficient as governments go. And now as we sit here, yesterday, Friday, the governor was supposed to have a news conference to talk about some plan for the budget gap. He's supposed to have a news conference later this morning. This is a Saturday morning that we're here, and I'm wondering how all this drama made its way into Topeka that, you know, for really the past 150 years was, except for the one time when they had to call out the militia when there was some craziness between who was going to lead the House of Representatives. Outside of that, you know, it was a pretty, you know, get stuff done kind of place. So what happened?
I say this a lot. Kansans are very pragmatic people, down to earth, practical, get the job done kind of people, hard workers who get along. We have an innate sense of courtesy that we extend to each other. What has happened in the last few years, we have seen Washington-style politics brought to bear in the Topeka State House. And I think the conflict that gets sown intentionally is a problem. And I think that the tactics used are unsavory, and I think there's question as to whether certain things that happen are even ethical. So it is a real problem, and I would love to see us get back to our roots and get back to
just a boring
greater level of
decorum. A boring 90 days?
Yeah.
Jay Center from the PV Post, thanks for coming. You're doing a hell of a job over there. My colleague Kyle Palmer, thank you for joining us. Melissa, when you first joined us, mm-hmm. your tune to roll out on was Trouble from the Music Man. I don't know how you think if you think that we still have trouble. So to get to know you a little bit better, your second favorite tune, or if you still think we have trouble, it's up to you.
No, we need to pick a new song, and I've been thinking about this all week. So one day it was going to be Homeward Bound by Simon and Garfunkel, because that's how I was feeling, stuck in Topeka in the middle of the night. Yesterday, it was more Hotel California, because it was craziness. Yeah. And, you know, that line, we're all stuck here.
You can check out. Not that
part of it. The one where we are all prisoners here of our own device.
Yeah.
You know, we have choices, and we're making them. So, but really, one morning at breakfast, the theme from the Poseidon Adventure came on. The Maureen McGovern, There's Got to Be a Morning After. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a song of hope. And I still, through all of this chaos and craziness, I remain optimistic that we will make progress and that the people of the state of Kansas will wake up and make some changes in 2016.
Thus it shall be. State House Blend is produced by Matt Kodap. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. And my friend Steve Prasky makes a little room for us every Tuesday on Up to Date. Thanks to all my guests. I'm Sam Zeff. See you next time.
It's waiting right outside the store.